Happy 420, everyone. This is And, and I'm here with...
And.
That's Anders Lee here, and I'm Andy Gitlitz, Antifada Podcast. Anders is from Pod Damn America, and this is our show that we do together. Well, I don't really know what the show's going to be yet. This is only our second episode. But here's what we're doing today. We're going to get real baked.
That's right.
And we're going to read Walter Benjamin.
Yes. Excited for this. This is a 420 episode, and this is going to be difficult for me because I don't smoke weed anymore very often, basically at all, because the last time I did it, I got like a mild panic attack. Not panic attack, but I got just heavy anxiety. You were actually there. It was at a party at our friend Alex Gendler's. It was like around a year ago, and someone offered me weed, and I was like, you know what, sure. And I immediately got way too high. And then this person started talking at me about copyright law. And for some reason, it just gave me a ton of anxiety. And then I just remember like soaking into the couch, listening to people. There was like a YIMBY person who was debating. You remember this?
Vaguely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't talk. But I will. I'm going to, you know, it's been a while. And I think I'm up to the task, hopefully. I'll probably get anxiety, but that's okay.
You know, I'm at the point now, and so just so people know, we're not stoned yet.
Right.
We're going to record this little intro, and then we're going to go take a walk around the block and smoke a hash joint. And then we're going to make some nachos, and we'll be back here with the nachos, and we're going to read Walter Benjamin. But I'm at the point where I kind of like the anxiety.
Really?
But for sure, I remember having moments like that where I'm like too stoned in a place. I'm very uncomfortable and I just want to lie down. And
yeah.
That's the best thing to do, I think, if you get that stoned, is just get some time to yourself, lie down, try to take a nap or clear your head or whatever.
Yeah. Or do a podcast. I mean, I used to love doing everything on weed, eating, talking, performing. Performing sexually. I did all of that on the influence of cannabis and loved every minute of it. For a while it was like smoking too much. And then I took a break for a while and smoked right before a stand-up set. And I did well. And then after that, I was like, okay, I'm only going to smoke weed before I do stand-up or podcast. And then eventually it turned back into smoking it sporadically. And then I just, in my late 20s, early 30s was like, I can't do it.
Yeah, for me, it's pretty hit or miss if I perform well podcasting or anything else, even socially when I'm stoned. When I take an edible, sometimes I get like really talky, and in my head, at least, I'm very funny.
Uh-huh.
I just, and then later I'm wondering, was I being really obnoxious and annoying? Well, before we go smoke, I want to ask you a couple quick weed questions.
Okay.
Tell me about the first time you ever got high, or the first time you ever smoked, either one.
The first time was at an anti-war rally when I was 15, and I had a weed brownie and didn't feel anything, but I felt really bad about having done it. And
wow, a weed brownie and you didn't feel anything.
I felt nothing. It may have been a bad batch, or I think it was just because it was like my first time ingesting, but
that's
I felt
a dangerous thing to try on your first time.
You had the I whole guess thing. So. I had half of one, and I went home and drank vinegar because I was like, scared of it. So maybe that cleared my
Why
system.
Why did you drink vinegar?
I heard that like flushes you out, so I did that.
That can't be true.
Yeah, probably not. But I did that, and I put on a VHS 9/11 conspiracy documentary that at the rally. I'm one of the
What year
last.
Was this?
2006.
Wow. Yeah, I remember going to... like countercultural things back then and people giving you like burnt InfoWars CDs and stuff back when Alex Jones was like somewhat embraced by the anti-globe movement. Yeah. You know, so for me, I was in high school, probably a sophomore, and my parents were away and I invited my like indie rock friends to come over. They were real stoners. I was like a grunge punk kid. And they were like, you got to make sure you inhale it deep into your lungs. So I was so focused on making sure I did that right that I wasn't too focused on the flame aspect of it, and I lit my grunge bangs on fire.
Oh no!
And to this day, when I see those guys, they're like, I always remember when you lit your hair on fire smoking weed. And for a while, it was one of those things that for a while I was just denying it. Like, you know, when you deny something that everyone saw happen,
you meant to do it because it's kind of like
punk now rock. I know you're supposed to. Yeah, like yeah, that's cool. That's how you. Yeah. That's how Kurt did it.
Do you not smoke weed with your hair not on fire? Come on.
And then we watched the Pavement DVD.
Okay.
Which we love Pavement. That was like our band in high school.
Really?
Because I saw Courtney Love play the Cut Your Hair video. And yeah, we were.
And you took it a step further. Why don't you go and burn your hair?
Oh, man. If someone had said that when we were stoned, I would have been cracking up. But I don't remember being super I must have been somewhat stoned, but I don't think I knew what. Maybe I didn't totally inhale. All right, second question, then we'll go smoke. What's the stonedest you've ever been? Was it that time at Alex Gendler's house?
No, it was 420, I think 2017. I was at a show where they were passing around free joints, and like I just like too much, you know, and you usually don't have, I have a high tolerance level, or I did when I was a stoner. And so I wasn't used to like saying no, but I couldn't talk. I like walked all the way home, which was maybe an hour and a half, and couldn't speak. Yeah, you know, there's a certain point where you like smoke a lot of weed and then you're like, I got to come down from this. What am I like? Drink some water and maybe have some vinegar, smoke another bowl, you know, like at that stage, it's kind of, you get, you just get higher and higher and higher. And then you think the snake will eat its tail, but it doesn't.
Well, this is a safe space. Don't worry. If you are not feeling comfortable, you are welcome to just lie down. I'll put on a Pavement record and, okay, cut up some orange slices for you and, pour some vinegar out.
Do oranges work on weed?
No, I think that's more of a.
Well, let's pretend they do for placebo.
Yeah, but it's a good orange. It'll make you feel better. All right, so we're gonna go get stoned.
When was the stonest you've ever been?
I forgot. Yeah, I was at a punk house in New Paltz, hanging out with, I believe it was members of the band Latterman.
Latterman, not Letterman.
Latterman.
Okay.
Latterman. And, gotcha. One of them. And we were at this punk house, and there was a bong, but there was no weed. And one of the members of Latterman was like, oh, don't worry, I know what to do. And he takes out a knife and scrapes the bowl of the bong and gets all of the... And I took a bong rip of that, thinking like, oh, how high am I going to get from that? And oh boy, did I get high. later on, I found out that the reason I probably got as high as I did was because they were not just smoking weed out of that bong. They were probably smoking DMT and all kinds of crazy shit.
Salvia.
Maybe salvia. But I was definitely, I had to lie down on the punk house couch and just close my eyes and like try to keep my shit together for a while. But I was very paranoid and not feeling good. And I think that's the stonedest I've ever been.
This is all right. Making me really nervous.
You're listening to Neil Young. We just ate some burnt nachos. I know I'm stoned because Anders just dropped his Kindle.
Oh, it survived an earthquake and now this.
Well, we're going to talk about not a lib, but a real communist, Walter Benjamin. He was a Berlin man.
And a Paris man, too. Sorry.
He was born in Berlin. I read some of his book about growing up in Berlin.
Right, but I would say Berlin boy, Paris man, but to each his own.
He was a bohemian. He strode the arcades of France, and in this book, he's traveling in the south of France, in Aix and in Marseille. And
is it called that, Aix?
I think it's pronounced Aix.
Really?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Aix, the everything city.
Yeah. I wonder if they do that on French maps, if it really does mark the spot.
Yeah, he ended up in exile in Marseille.
Exile.
Awaiting, trying to get papers to go to the United States, and he never got them. So he ended up going across the Pyrenees and not making it. So that's sad. But this is in a happier time in his life. And this is part of the protocols of drug use. They had these experiments where they would ingest weed and write and talk to each other and sort of record their experiences. Oh, actually, I've got this is a little good chunk from the translator's introduction.
Nice.
The drug experiments documented in this volume took place in the years 1927 to 1934 in Berlin, Marseille, and Ibiza.
Ibiza.
They were partying in Ibiza even back then. Benjamin experimented with several different drugs. He ate hashish, smoked opium, and allowed himself to be injected subcutaneously with mescaline and the opiate eucodol.
What is subcutaneously? I've heard of simultaneously, but this is what
I
is.
I don't know.
Subcutaneously.
Yeah, maybe he put it in his butt. Injected in his butt. Let's look that up. When you don't know a word, you should look it up.
You know, you can even just press the bubble.
It just means under the skin. What other kind of injection would it be?
Yeah, that made it sound like he did them at the same time.
All right.
That is interesting language. All right,
Benjamin's translator, maybe word choice. Okay, so they record the experiments, very loosely organized, kept in the form of drug protocols. He took these drugs, which he looked on as poison, for the sake of the knowledge to be gained from their use. As an initiation into what he called profane illumination, the drug experiments were part of his lifelong effort to broaden the concept of experience.
Mm. I like that. That's important, experience.
Did you want to read this other part of the intro?
Oh, yeah. I found this interesting. This guy Boone, whose first name fails me, but he said, in a sense, Benjamin's project for a left-wing politics of intoxication, including Bataille, failed. After the war, World War II, drugs became a right-wing thing. There was William S. Burroughs, Huxley, etc. But to this day, any rapprochement between Marxism and intoxication beyond time-honored the tradition of alcohol, that is rare. Which I don't know why I totally agree with that.
Maybe this was written in like 1961 or something.
Okay, I feel like it was more modern than that. The new left feels like an oversight there. But it is kind of an interesting point that they were thinking about this stuff back then, consciousness and, you know, what that means for revolution and Marxism.
I mean, this was a time, this interwar period is really interesting because the surrealists and the Dadaists and the Letcherists, this was the artistic avant-garde in Europe, but it was also the political avant-garde. These were communists. A lot of them formed the Fourth International. Some of them were Stalinists, too. A couple of them ended up being fascists. You know, the futurists in Italy.
Dime Square, you're describing.
Sure. You know, I wouldn't really call them avant-garde art. That's sort of, they've got all the aesthetics of being avant-gardists without the actual avant-garde, as far as I know. So they were the artistic avant-garde and the political avant-garde simultaneously, and Benjamin was right in the middle of this circle. Actually, here's another quote from the intro that gets to that. Like the surrealists, with those works, he was critically engaged during the 1920s. Benjamin sought to infuse thinking with the energies of dream, but in the interest of a waking dream, in a state of intoxication, the thread of ratiocination is loosened.
Ratiocination. That is a word for social media. My God. Yeah. That's what it is spelled like. Ratiocination. Yeah,
that's what it is. Ratiocination is loosened, unraveled, not dissolved. With the emptying out of personality, there is a diffusion of perspective. Thinking is sensualized. A mimetic power holds sway in the realm of perception, the realm of the image space, in all its plasticity. The intoxicated man takes the part of things around him, becoming, like the physiognomic flaneur or the child at play, a virtuoso of empathy, another dangerous drug, and at the same time, with utter detachment, drawing objects and events into his thickening web. I remember feeling high in that way, and a lot of these Benjamin recordings like remind me of how I felt when I was much younger and I got super stoned, and I rarely get that stoned anymore, even though I just keep getting more and more potent weed. I think I've just passed the point where I can be so stoned that everything assembles into a thickening web of empathy and dreamlike, you know, I don't pierce the veil of Maya anymore, unfortunately.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to read Protocols of Drug Experiments.
All right, so let's start with the protocols. Here we go. In all parts of the world, the words liberty, equality, and fraternity have brought whole legions into our ranks through our blind agents, carrying our banners with delight. Meanwhile, these words were worms which ruined the prosperity of the goys, everywhere destroying peace, quiet, and solidarity, undermining all the foundations of their states. You will see subsequently that this aided our triumph, for it also gave us, among other things, the opportunity to grasp the trump card, the abolition of privileges, in other words, the very essence of the aristocracy of the goys, which was the only protection of peoples and countries against us.
Wow. What a quote.
Okay, that's... Okay, I see what I did here. I pulled up the wrong protocols.
What I also was going to ask you, when he says goys, is that the way probably most people would... take that word, like for a non-Jewish person?
I think it's like a Jewish slur for non-Jews.
Okay.
And
at this point, it's a slur, because now we probably...
I think it's always been a...
Oh, really?
Yeah, Gentile is the non-slur. Wait
a
second.
It's so funny to have a slur for everybody who's not you. That's like a new step. You're half Jewish, half Irish, yes? Uh-huh.
I'm sure the Irish have some slur for non-Irish people.
No, I think they don't, because I was just thinking about this.
In Gaelic, there's probably something.
Oh, yeah, in Ireland, I'm sure. But I mean, Irish-American, like, I feel like there's anything, the more Irish you are, like, we're both half, you ask your parent, like, is this an Irish thing? And they're every to a T, they're always like, I have no idea. Like, it's just not, we don't have traditions. At a certain point, they got cut off and they're like, we don't even...
All right, let's get back to the Benjamin.
Yes. Speaking of birthright.
Where do you want to start with this?
Yeah, what is he going on here? This is very much like, I got stoned and I'm feeling like the thunder of God, you know?
What paragraph are you talking about?
The one we just read. Let's start, in all parts of the world, the words liberty, equality, and fraternity, that one.
Yeah, no, that's from the Protocols of the Elders of Zion. Did you not pick up on that?
No, I didn't. I didn't know what you were doing. I thought you were like, you know, it was an editing thing. I didn't realize it was...
You should put this behind the paywall. This is ridiculous.
Wow, that's crazy. But that, okay, in my defense, his kind of... And this, I guess this had nothing to do with this text, but in his other work, he's very much into like messianic Judaism.
So sure, I mean, like the Protocols of the Elders of Zion is a forgery that takes a... clandestine rabbinical socialists would say as they divide up the world.
Interesting. I see. I just assumed it was like 100% made up, like, which I guess it is, but
it is made up. Yeah, but it's,
but
like,
they're drawing from like some, like a, I guess at least a stereotype.
It's I mean, the czarist secret police forged it, I believe, after 1905 to discredit the socialist movement.
Yeah,
so it's got things socialists would say, and it's like, yeah, and we're doing that stuff because we're Jews. We're trying to fool the Gentiles and control them,
right?
Because they're animals and we're smart. That's not what Benjamin.
Yeah,
says.
I was surprised. I was surprised to hear him that like chauvinistic. Like, whoa,
Benjamin loves the people. Maybe we can start. So the first one has a bunch of little aphorisms. So that's probably a good place to start.
Yeah,
this is all right. Here we go. First protocol. Main features of my first impression of hashish, written December 18th, 1927, at 3:30 a.m. Spirits hover, vignette style, over my right shoulder. Coldness in that shoulder. In connection with this, I have the feeling there are four others in the room besides me, bypassing the necessity of including myself in the account. These are really stoned anecdotes that don't make a lot of sense.
I mean, I kind of get what he's like. It's kind of cool. Like, there's just a you feel something hovering above you, but it's not like somebody coming in the room to kill you. It's like a holy sort of, there's something fluttering around you, and it's metaphysical, but it's really just the weed.
You want to read this one?
Yes. The comic is elicited not just from faces, but from incidents. One seeks occasions for laughter, and perhaps it is only for this reason that so much of what one sees presents itself as arranged, as experiment, so that one can laugh about it.
So normally you would get stoned and put on a Cheech and Chong movie and laugh it up, but Benjamin is alone in his room, and he's contemplating the concept of humor, of the concept of the comic.
Right. Yeah. This was interesting because situations, incidents, kind of back to the mimetic thing, like when you're high and with a group of friends, you will keep like referring back to the same like funny sentence said or like thing.
Remember
you
when
saw.
I burned the nachos?
yeah, exactly. Like if I had been still razzing you about that.
Yeah.
I'm not mean spirited, so I wouldn't. But like that goes on and you like comment on it and build on the joke like again and again and again. That's kind of what that reminded me of, because I feel like weed kind of compresses things in that way, or it can.
One is very much struck by how long one's sentences are. This, too, connected with horizontal extension and probably with laughter. The arcade is also a phenomenon of long horizontal extension, perhaps combined with vistas receding into distant, fleeting, tiny perspectives. The element of the diminutive would serve to link the idea of the arcade to laughter. So by the arcade, he's talking about these covered sidewalks in European cities that Benjamin was really obsessed with. He was also really obsessed with just taking a stroll.
Mm-hmm.
He called it being a flaneur, and then the situationist would adapt this to and the concept of the derive. Those guys love to just take walks, and they thought it was very political.
Yeah. You know that Mallrats was actually based on Walter Benjamin.
Really?
I mean, no, but you could imagine it, right? Like it's it feels like kind of the.
It would be a fun essay to write.
Maybe, yeah. Like Mallrats feels like the late 20th century version of like the flaneur, you know.
Yeah, Kevin Smith strikes me as more of an analytical philosopher, but more of a Bertrand Russell type.
Okay.
Aversion to information, rudiments of a state of rapture, great sensitivity to open doors, loud talk, music. Feeling of understanding Poe much better now. The gates to a world of grotesquerie seem to be opening. Only I don't wish to enter. All right, he's freaking out. He's paranoid.
Yeah, and he's thinking dark thoughts. And yeah. I think that's really what that's about. Like he, you know, has a grotesque imagination and thinks about this stuff. But this gives him like a ticket to that, and he doesn't necessarily want to be there.
He's worried the raven's going to fly through the window.
Nevermore.
Yep. You want to read this next one?
Oven turns into cat. The word ginger is uttered, and suddenly in place of the desk, there is a fruit stand in which I immediately recognize the desk. The 1001 Nights came to mind.
All right. You're stoned, Benjamin. You are stoned AF.
Why is he saying ginger?
I think he's just so stoned that like words are popping into his mind and he's contemplating them.
Yeah, the word one is really good. Is that in this protocol?
I don't know, but we'll get to it, hopefully. For me, it was like this. Pronounced antipathy to conversing about matters of practical life, the future, dates, and politics. You are fixated in the intellectual sphere as a man possessed may be fixated on the sexual, under its spell, sucked into it. So he doesn't want to talk about... boring everyday stuff. He doesn't want to talk about politics. Doesn't want to talk about the descending fascism that they're seeing in Europe at all sides. He wants to be fixated on the intellectual sphere, the I guess more philosophy and concepts rather than contingent reality.
And then is he saying that you still get into the sexual? Or is he saying that he looks down upon?
He's saying he is fixated on this intellectual state like you would be if you were really horned up.
Oh, okay. Maybe fixated. Okay.
Which he...
As a man possessed, maybe fixated on the sexual. Yeah. Okay.
You want to write read 19?
Sure. Mistrust of food. A particular and highly accentuated instance of the feeling one has about many things. You can't really mean to look that way.
Yeah, I don't know. Don't know what he's talking about here.
The food looks inappropriate, like the pear is kind of frowning at you.
Oh, okay. He's freaking out. This is maybe his first time using it. So he's, yeah. All right, here's the last one in this section. You follow the same paths of thought as before, only they appear strewn with roses. That's a nice way to leave it.
Yeah.
He sounded pretty scared before, but he's seeing the positive things to stop and appreciate along the way.
Mm-hmm. Stop and smell the flowers. Stop and look at the roses through your rose-tinted lenses.
That was his first experience, and we're going to jump to... All right. Saturday, September 29th, 1928, Marseille. Took hashish at 7 o'clock in the evening after long hesitation. During the day, I had been an ex. I note down what follows only in order to determine whether or not effects set in, since my being alone allows for scarcely any other experimental controls. The crying of a small child nearby disturbs me. I think 3/4 of an hour have already passed, but it is only 30 minutes.
Whoa.
It's not really that big a difference. Consequently, for aside from feeling a little dazed, I notice no effects. I lie in bed, reading and smoking. Always opposite me, this view of the belly of Marseille. Now images are beginning to gain power over me. The street I have seen so often is like a knife cut. A last impetus to taking hashish was provided by certain pages of Steppenwolf that I read this morning. You want to read on?
I am definitely feeling the effects now. Chiefly negative in that it's become difficult for me to read or write. A good 3/4 of an hour has passed. No, much seems unwilling to come. It would have to be just now that the telegram from Spire arrived. Work on novel finally abandoned, unquote, and so on. It's not good when an ultimately disappointing piece of news breaks into the mounting rush of intoxication like a hailstone. But only one interruption? There was a moment of suspense when I thought it was Brion on the way up to my room. I was quite agitated. Like we can summarize this, I think. He thinks a friend's coming, but it's not only not the friend, it's not the friend, it's the bellhop. But not only is it not the bellhop, or not the friend, it's not the bellhop, and it's also a telegram boy who's delivering him a telegram.
It's from Spire, who says... Work on novel finally abandoned, which is sad. But I've sent that telegram before, that's for sure.
Damn. Yeah, it's funny that it's like two people who it's kind of like the copy of a copy thing. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like this person, not that person, this person, not, but they're receiving something from somebody who's not there entirely.
He's also getting pissed because he can't read his precious book. Added in dictation, it went this way. I was, in fact, lying on the bed, feeling absolutely certain that in the city of hundreds of thousands, where only one person knew me, I would not be disturbed. And there was a knock on my door. This was something that certainly had never happened to me here before now. I made no move to get up and go to the door, but rather asked who was there without altering my position in the slightest. The bellhop. There's a gentleman who wishes to speak to you. Have him come up. I stand leaning against the bedpost, my heart palpitating, really... It would be altogether extraordinary to see Brion suddenly appear. The gentleman, however, was the telegram boy. So he's adding in more details to that story.
Right. The following written for the next morning. Amid positively splendid, mild after effects, producing in me such lightheartedness that I may not entirely keep to the original sequence of events. Brion, to be sure, did not come.
Okay, so this is him writing the next morning about what he did the previous night.
Right. I finally left the hotel, the effects seeming non-existent or so weak that the precaution of staying at home was unnecessary. My first port of call was the cafe on the corner of Canebière and the Cour Belson. Seen from the harbor, The one on the right, therefore not my usual cafe. What now? Only a certain benevolence, the expectation of being received by people in a kindly way. The feeling of loneliness is very quickly lost. My walking stick begins to give me a special pleasure. The handle of a coffee pot used here suddenly looks very large and, moreover, remains so. One becomes so tender, fears that a shadow falling on the paper might hurt it. Ooh. The nausea disappears. One reads the notices on the urinals. It would not surprise me if this or that person came up to me. But when no one does, I am not disappointed either. But it's too noisy for me there.
Mm-hmm.
Now the hashish eater's demands on time and space come into force. As is known, these are absolutely regal. Versailles, for one who has taken hashish, is not too large or eternity too long.
Mm.
Against the background of these immense dimensions of inner experience, of absolute duration and immeasurable space, a wonderful, beatific humor dwells all the more fondly on the contingencies of the world of space and time. I feel this humor infinitely when I am told at Basso's that the kitchen and the entire upstairs have just been closed, while I have just sat down to feast into eternity.
It's interesting he uses beatific there, because he's sort of forecasting an entire movement of guys who got stoned and wandered around and wrote about it.
The Lost Generation?
Yeah, and they, I mean, the Beats.
The Beats, yeah. Oh, okay.
So the Beats right, take their name from the concept of beatific, because they're into Eastern philosophy and spirituality.
Oh, interesting. Afterward, despite this, the feeling that all this indeed remains always perpetually bright, frequented and animated. I must note how I found a seat at Basso's. What mattered to me was the view of the old port that one got from the upper floors. Walking past below, I spied an empty table on the balcony of the second story. Yet in the end, I reached only the first. Most of the window tables were occupied, so when I went up to a very large one that had just apparently just been vacated. As I was sitting down, however, the disproportion of seating myself at so large a table caused me such shame that I walked around across the entire floor to the opposite end to sit at a smaller table that became visible to me only as I reached it.
He's just like me, for real. Yeah, if I go to a cafe, I'm stoned, I'm like, oh, people are going to be mad at me for sitting right at the big table. I got to the
yeah
table.
And you know what? Maybe that table's too small. And you're going to stick out at the small table, so you need a really medium table, and that's hard to find, like Goldilocks with tables.
But the meal came later. First, the little bar on the harbor. I was again just on the point of retreating in confusion, for a concert, indeed a brass band, seemed to be playing there. I only just managed to explain to myself that it was nothing more than the blaring of car horns. He's like, oh, there's a band in the distance. Oh, no, it's just cars. On the way to Viewport, I already had this wonderful lightness and sureness of step that transformed the stony, irregular earth of the great square that I was crossing into the surface of a country road along which I strode at night like an energetic hiker. For at this time, I was still avoiding the Cannabiere, not yet quite sure of my regulatory functions. That must be like the bar area.
Uh-huh.
In that little harbor bar, the hashish then began to exert its canonical magic with a primitive sharpness that I had scarcely felt until then. For it began now to make me into a physiognomist, a studier of faces, I believe that means.
Hmm.
Or at least a contemplator of physiognomies. And I underwent something unique in my experience. I positively fixed my gaze on the faces around me, some of which were of remarkable coarseness or ugliness. Faces that I would normally have avoided for a twofold reason. I would either have wished to attract their gaze, nor have endured their brutality. I would neither have wished to attract their gaze, nor have endured their brutality. It was a very advanced post, this harbor tavern. So, okay, so he's like looking around, and he's like, oh, all these people are fucking ugly.
Yeah, you kind of judge people, you're roasting people in your mind.
Yeah, look at these things, gross fucking goys. It was still sufficiently far from the Rue Boutière, yet no bourgeois sat there. At most, besides the true port proletarian, a few petty bourgeois families from the neighborhood. I now suddenly understood how, to a painter, ugliness could appear as a true reservoir of beauty, or better, as its treasure chest, a jagged mountain with all the inner gold of beauty gleaming from the wrinkles, glances, features. I especially remember an infinitely bestial, vulgar male face in which the line of renunciation struck me with sudden violence. It was above all men's faces that had begun to interest me. Now, too, began the game, which I played for quite a while, of recognizing someone I knew in every face. That happens to me when I'm stoned.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm walking down the street, I'm like, oh, shit.
No, once I thought I saw you, and I pointed, and I said, and... And it was not you, so it didn't make sense.
Did the guy notice?
Yeah. And he's like, and what?
Oh, and one. You see that basketball game last night?
Yeah, that's what I tried. That's what I tried to get out of with.
All right. So he's looking at this guy, and he's like, oh, he's ugly, but he's so beautiful deep down. Often I knew the name, often not. The deception vanished as deceptions vanish in dreams, not in shame, not compromised, but peacefully and amiably, like a being who has performed his service. Under these circumstances, there was no question of loneliness. Was I my own company? Surely not so undisguisedly. I doubt whether that would have made me so happy. More likely this. I became my own most skillful, fond, shameless procurer, gratifying myself with the ambiguous assurance of one who knows from profound study the wishes of his employer. Then it began to take half an eternity until the waiter reappeared. All right, so he's like, all right, I'm really stoned, using my thoughts and my actions to impress myself in this drug experiment. I think that's what he's saying.
Right. Yeah, you just get like a rush of ego before you get the whatever the opposite of ego is. It.
I don't know if that's the opposite of ego. That's a question for Walter Benjamin. Okay. He's waiting for the waiter. He's like, where's this fucking waiter already? I'm stoned as hell here. I'm really hungry. Or rather, I could not wait for him to appear. I went to the bathroom and paid at the counter. Whether tips are usual in such taverns, I do not know. But under other circumstances, I should have given something in any case. Under the influence of hashish yesterday, however, I was on the stingy side for fear of attracting attention by extravagance. I succeeded in making myself really conspicuous. So he goes and he's like waiting for the fucking waiter. He's not coming. And he's like, all right, I'm too stoned. I'm just going to get out of here. And he goes to pay and he's like, do I leave a tip? Do I not? Well, if I leave a tip, they're going to notice that I'm stoned. So
yeah,
I'll just err on the side of not leaving a tip, which...
Right.
Don't err on the side of stingy.
No, don't. But this is making me realize like how much tipping culture in Europe is just a black box to me still. Like, it's so confusing what they think. Like, they get confused by us, but I don't know what their policy is because everyone you ask.
I think a tip is always appreciated but not expected like it is here.
Okay.
But I always tip because I just want to give Americans a good name.
Same.
Similarly, with the order at Basso's, first I ordered a dozen oysters. The man wanted me to order the next course at the same time. I named some standard dish. He came back with the news that none was left. I'm sorry, I'm reading your paragraph. I'm just having fun reading.
Yeah, it's all right. This is a very, like, French waiter moment, you know?
Yeah.
Like, he's not going to let him just order an appetizer. You have to also tell me the entree, and we don't have it.
Yeah, he's like, all right, I'll take the oysters. Like, okay, what else? There's just the oysters or what? And then he's like, oh, I don't know, the fucking steak. And then he comes back and he's like, yeah, we don't have any steak left. I then pointed to a place on the menu in the vicinity of this dish and was on the point of ordering each item, one after another. But then the name of the one above it caught my attention and so on until I finally reached the top of the list. So he's like looking over the menu like, what do I have this?
Yeah, he's kind of panicking, but you can tell he's also like a kid on a slide. He's like, ooh, look at all these things.
Yeah, it all looks so good. Yeah. We're just like, come on, dude. What is your first time smoking hash? You don't got hash in Germany?
Yeah.
This was not just from greed, however, but from an extreme politeness towards the dishes, which I did not want to offend by refusal. Like, oh, it'd be so rude if I didn't order the chicken carbonara.
Yeah.
In short, I came to a stop at a pâté de lion, lion's paste.
Wow.
I thought with a witty smile when it lay clean on a plate before me, and then contemptuously, this tender rabbit or chicken meat, whatever it may be. To my lionish hunger, it would not have seemed inappropriate to satisfy itself on a lion. Oh, so he's like, oh, even if it's a lion, I'm fucking hungry. I'll eat it. Moreover, I had tacitly decided that as soon as I had finished at Basso's, it was 10:30, I would go to another restaurant and dine a second time. Oh, what's that called? It's called a bang bang.
I've heard of mukbang.
Mukbang is similar. Okay. I don't know if it derives from the same root. But yeah, bang bang is when you you have one meal and you're like, you know what? Fuck it. Let's go to another restaurant and have another meal.
Okay. So two separate locations.
Bennyman's having a little private bang bang.
Yeah. Okay.
Your turn.
But first, back to the walk to Basso's. I strolled along the quay. The fuck is a quay?
Oh, yeah.
Like a river, like those little... Those like mini rivers they have, maybe. I strolled along the quay and read one after another the names of the boats tied up there. As I did so, an incomprehensible gaiety came over me, and I smiled in turn at all the Christian names of France. The love promised to these boats by their names seemed wonderfully beautiful and touching to me. Only one of them, Arrow 2, which reminded me of aerial warfare, I passed by without cordiality, exactly as, in the bar that I had just left, my gaze had been obliged to pass over certain excessively deformed countenances.
So he's still fucking... So now he was, like, freaked out. He went to being like, oh, but in their ugly visages, I see the beauty of a craggy mountain range. And then at the second restaurant, he's like, all right, these guys are just ugly. I don't want to look at them. They're gross. They're fugly. Upstairs at Basso's, when I looked down, the old games began for the first time. The square in front of the harbor, I can put it best this way, was like a palette on which my imagination mixed the qualities of the place, trying them out now this way, now that, irresponsibly if you like, but nonetheless, much the way a great painter looks on his palette as an instrument. I hesitated mightily before ordering wine. It was a half bottle of cassis, a dry wine. A piece of ice was floating in the glass, yet it went excellently with my drug. I had chosen my seat on account of the open window through which I couldn't look down at the dark square. Damn, I want a glass of wine now. I haven't had a drink in 2 weeks.
And, yeah.
It feels good, but...
Wine never did it for me once someone mentioned that it, like, inflames your sinuses, or it's, like, you know, does something to you in the...
Yeah, it does kind of fuck you up. Sulfites,
and I just think about that when I have it.
But I love having a glass of wine with a meal. That's a great experience.
Fair enough.
Or even without a meal.
Here I must observe in general, the solitude of such intoxication has its dark side. To speak only of the physical aspect... There was a moment in the Harbor Tavern when a violent pressure in my diaphragm sought relief through humming. Does that just mean farting?
Maybe.
And there is no doubt, furthermore, that truly beautiful and illuminating visions were not awakened. On the other hand, solitude works in these states as a filter. What one writes down the following day is more than an enumeration of momentary experiences. In the night, the trance sets itself off from everyday experience with fine prismatic edges. To begin to solve the riddle of the ecstasy of trance. And there's another German word. You want to take a shot at this one?
Rauschgluck.
Rauschgluck.
Gluck is happy. And Rausch, but it's like, yeah, I guess like a happy trance.
Okay. There's probably a club in Berlin called Rauschgluck.
Yeah, probably.
Ecstasy of trance one ought to...
Wait, I have to see if I'm right about that. I'm just like pretending to know German.
German scholar, A.M. Gitlitz. Gitlitz sounds German. Is it really a club in Berlin?
The first thing that comes up is, looks like it's a reference to this text.
Wow. So did he invent a word here? Shakespeare did that. Rush.
Rausch means rush. and Gluck means happiness. All right, I was
a rush of happiness.
Yeah,
there you go. To solve the riddle of the ecstasy of trance, Rausch Gluck one ought to meditate once again on Ariadne's thread. What joy in the mere act of unrolling a ball of thread?
Sure.
It's going cat mode.
Yeah.
And this joy is very deeply related to the joy of intoxication, just as it is to the joy of creation. And he's also, I guess, he's got a beat behind him, you know, he's starting to get jiggy with it.
Yeah.
Of course, that's the song that comes.
He's feeling groovy.
Yeah. And this joy is very deeply related to the joy of intoxication, just as the joy of creation. We go forward, but in so doing, we not only discover the twists and turns of the cave into which we're venturing, but also enjoy this pleasure of discovery against the background of the other rhythmic bliss of unwinding the thread. The certainty of unrolling an artfully wound skein, isn't that the joy of all productivity, at least in prose? Mm. Under the influence of hashish, we are enraptured prose beings raised to the highest power. French.
De la poésie lyrique, pas pour un sou.
Roll another blunt. What does that mean?
I don't know. I don't speak French. La la da 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 da. La da da. La 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 da. La 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 da. La 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 da.